This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Every Step Along the Way podcast. A very busy pod as always today, breaking down a much needed 1-0 win over QPR, thank God. A little bit of news and bits like that, and then we'll also look, of course, to this weekend's fixture against Coventry. Now, it wouldn't be a podcast if it was just me, it'd be pretty damn boring, so welcome back, Mr. Daniel Buxton.
So yeah, I'm breathe a bit, mate, I'm breathe.
Yeah, you like that phrase, and it used it on Radio Stoke the other day.
Well, yes, it's very apt there, isn't it? It just perfectly sums up where we're sort of at. It's been a long week of worry, I think, leads up to Wednesday night, and now we can just hopefully relax that the worst, that we've maybe hit the bottom for this season anyway, and we can, guide ourselves to a bit of safety, a bit of relaxation, and then the manager can work his magic over the summer, ready for next year. Maybe. Could be.
Yeah, we know too well not to jump the gun on that one. We'll certainly see. But no, look, I think you're right. Getting into last night, I looked at the team when obviously it first came out, and I wouldn't say there was overly any major surprises. I guess for me, I think Kundal's inclusion was a little bit of a surprise. I think looking back on the game now, I think I can kind of see why he went with him. I think the jury's still out on Kundal for me, but I still think to have Chamadou, obviously it was a bit further up the pitch a little bit, you know, Ennis, Bay. I don't think there was overly major surprises. I thought he might have tried to start with Manhoof, but I think if we take just the kind of team itself, for me, Dan, I don't know about you, but for me, the Kundal inclusion was more of the surprise. I thought he might have gone, you know, Berger, Baker, and Juno is the three. But I think even then, I think Juno, he kind of played in that almost left-hand side. He's, you know, has it naturally drifted inside as well at times. I think there was a lot of moving parts in that midfield. But I think Kundal was probably the main surprise for me and Manhoof, I guess. Beyond that, I think it was what most of us would have chosen. Would you kind of go with that?
Yeah, I think I was very happy to see Baker come back in. I thought he had a good game.
Yeah,
it was interesting
absolutely.
As well for me. Baker seemed to be sitting deeper. He seemed to be the one that was sort of playing where Berger had been playing previously, sort of taking the ball off the defence. And that seemed to be, whether they were alternating and I just kept like noticing Baker there more. But yeah, for me, Baker seemed different. I thought he played well, to be fair. It wasn't a performance that, it wasn't classic Stoke City, was it? It wasn't one you're going to record and watch back a dozen times. It was one of them games that didn't need a performance like that, though. It was all about getting the victory. And I think the lads showed, and to me answered a lot of questions, really, about their sort of, you know, the character, their ability to fight, the desire. You know, questions have been asked about them, and the things that footballers probably don't like being questioned on are those sort of, you know, spectrums to the game, aren't they? And they answered a lot of the questions last night and showed that, yeah, they will fight and they can do the hard work, the nitty-gritty kind of stuff that, you know, that you have to do to be able to go out and do the nice fancy stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think that's probably a good summary, because, I mean, before the goal, I'm going to be honest, it was a pretty drab game of football from both sides. QPR were not good, and you could see why they were down here with us, because quite simply, we were not good either. I think that the goal came at the right time. I think that if there is a right time for goals, you know, I think we took the chance that we had. I think the flick on slash missed header, which is what it was, I think, for me. It was a header that he really should have made contact with, McNally. But Luke Berger, he rightly pointed out in his own interview that, you know, if you hang around that back post, you know, four or five times a season, the ball's going to land at your feet. So I think that was just what we needed at the right time. I think if you take that out, I do doubt whether we would have had enough to break through, if I'm honest. I think overall it was still it was a game that lacked a lot of quality, but I think you kind of hit it there, really. There was grit, there was determination. You know, you saw towards the end of the game, Baker and Loren literally riling up the players, like saying, right, this is the last, especially when that 8 minutes goes up, which I don't know where the hell they got 8 minutes from. But when that went up, it was a constant, you saw him visibly, you know, riling up the players around him, the likes of Kundun, the defence, right, let's get through this now. We absolutely cannot let this slip. And that is that leader. You know, the leaders on the pitch is the best way to point it. Like, that's exactly what we needed. And I agree with you. Baker was solid last night, really good. Berger, once again, is Berger. Like, he's so reliable, really good. I hope his knock is just precautionary being taken off. And you know what, Dan? I don't know about you, thought about these two. McNally and Rose. How good was Rose last night? He was cleaning up for Thompson several times. Like, that partnership shouldn't work, but it kind of is at the minute.
Yeah, they just seem to complement each other's games, don't they? And I don't know, is there maybe a trust in there? Is it just the fact that they were them playing together previously at Coventry that, I mean, I don't even think they did that much, but I suppose they do know each other's game better than they would know, say, Ben Wilmot.
Yeah.
So is it just that? And like I say, they know where the other one's going to be or what the other one wants to do. Yeah, it's a strange one, but if that's the partnership that kept clean sheets, then that's the one we go with, I suppose.
Well, yeah, Ben Wilmot's going to struggle to get back in if that carries on. I mean, I generally did think Rose, mate, was everywhere in that defence. He was covering left and right. Not the Michael Rose that I think a lot of us would actually associate with what we've seen early parts of the season, at least not for me.
No, I think it was definitely one of his better games, and you could tell he was up for it as you know, as they all were. I mean, I mentioned to you last night as well, I thought Keanu Hoover came back and had a, you know, real solid game. His form's been, you know, not the best, that's safe to say. He's been very erratic. Even when he's had solid games, he's managed to throw one or two major clangers in. But for the main part last night, I thought he was really solid, and you know, he's something of a hint to build on there, isn't there? Because you know, obviously there is ability there, and if he gets his confidence back up, you know, he can be a very good player in this running.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think some players, just to call out again, I made a few notes. Thompson, I think, had a very shaky first half. We got beaten down that fullback position on a couple of occasions. The first one early on, where they had, obviously Iverson makes a decent save. I think it was one he should have made, but he still made it. But then second half, I thought he just figured them out. I think we backed off a little bit. We went a little bit deeper, and I think that really played into his hands a bit. And like I said, with Rose helping to support him, I think we definitely improved. But it's still an issue. It's no shock. We can't do anything about it now. We've got to accept it for what it is. So I definitely think that Thompson grew into the game. Henry, yeah, I'll give you that. He was okay. I still think there was a couple of times again where he's let his man go, but that's not his worst performance. So no, I'm not going to disagree with what you said. I think he was okay. Shamadou, I thought, again, looked lively. I think the final ball isn't always great from him, but that's something he can develop. There was a couple of crosses which were pinpoint, which were really good. Ennis is the Jacob Brown of this team now. He didn't stop running. You know, he looked dangerous. He was willing to run at his man a couple of times. You know, that's what we've needed. And unfortunately, I think the only downside when he came off was I think we kind of lacked, you know, we lost that a bit. I mean, I saw Wesley gain a few plaudits, and maybe I just didn't see what they saw. But for me, Wesley, yeah, okay, you held it up in the corner. Okay, big deal. But beyond that, I just think the ball bounces off him too much. You know, he was being out-muscled at times, and I'm like, the size of you. I just don't rate him, Dan, really. So I think we lost that bite and that grit when Ennis came off.
Yeah, I'm surprised as well, Wesley, who's quite nippy. And we haven't really seen that from him, have we? We haven't seen any sort of scrap of pace from him. But I think maybe when he's been chucked on previously, I mean, I think he's had very, very few starts. I'm not, do you know what? I keep sort of a record of these things. I don't even think he's played a full 90 minutes yet. I think starts-wise, he's probably only on a couple. So I think what happens is usually he's chucked out at the end of games when we need a goal. And the opposite, because, you know, nine times out of ten this season, we've been behind in games needing a goal. and so he gets thrown on, and the opposition defence are camped out in their own box. Then the midfielder sitting deeper, and he'd have nowhere to run in behind, would there? He'd have to be played into. And because last night, obviously, QPR had to push on and try and get something, it left gaps, and he showed, like I say, balls around into the channels and over the top. He showed a bit of pace. And I thought maybe if we can utilise that more, there could actually be, you know, again, a usage for him that doesn't involve, we've got 10 minutes left, let's just smack it up to this big lad.
Yeah, I don't know how best to play to the guy, I think, at the minute. I don't know if he is going to be that target man, which I don't think he's capable of that. And you know what? I've heard a lot about how good his heading was previously when he came. We obviously don't play that type of way, do we? We're not swinging the balls in and aiming for heads all the time. And I think that would probably suit him quite well from his height and if he is as good as some people made out. So I think just the nature of how we play is not going to suit him, unfortunately, I think. So I would not surprised to see him go in the summer at all. Is his contract up in the summer? Or I imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a 12-month contract. I think it's pretty much next month. He'll be seeking pastures new.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's best for him as much as anything. What did you make of QPR? I'll be honest, I was really not impressed, if I'm honest. And I don't want to be too harsh on an opposition team because we aren't great. But I mean, other than the chap who was up front first half, I remember, I forget his name now. He looked lively. It really caused McNally a lot of problems.
Yes, I mean, you'd imagine, wouldn't you, that obviously they've been in better form than we have. And,
Armstrong, that's it. Armstrong.
Oh, Armstrong, yeah, up front. He's actually only about 20, isn't he? So he's definitely got a bit of a future there, and there's definitely something for QPR away with. But if they continue to play as they did last night, and I don't, you sometimes have to be, when you say like teams play poorly, I think sometimes you don't give the other side the correct amount of praise and credit. Like, were they really poor, or did we just stop everything they tried to do? We were just on it and stopped them being able to do. Like, we had a plan to nullify their attacks or whatever, and we pulled off with perfection, and they just couldn't create. I mean, they had the chance, didn't they, in the third minute? That obviously, you know, they needed a save out of Everton, and after that, I don't really remember anything. They had a few set pieces, a few corners they swung in. Begovic came up at the end, didn't he? I was thinking, don't you dare.
I know, yeah. He nearly got in on one of them, didn't he? On the first one. He nearly got there.
And then the second one, he went and stood on the keeper's toes, didn't he? I'm roughing the keeper up. but yeah, just like, I thought to myself, he's already scored at the other end, hasn't he? I thought, I don't want. But yeah, it's just a really good performance. And I say QPR themselves, I think if they do continue to play like that and get, whether it's a poor performance from them or a good performance from us, if they allow themselves to be contained like that in the rest of the season, then they will unfortunately be getting relegated.
Yeah, they really weren't showing an awful lot. And I can't pronounce their manager's name. I'm sure you can because you've got to that. But
Cifuentes.
That's the one. So, you know, I was watching him at times and I don't know an awful lot about him, right? But at times he was just like, he was doing this like, come on guys. There seemed to be no tactical direction from him at all. And if that's how he is permanently, I mean, yeah, good luck to him. But I agree with you. If they carry on like that, they're going to go down. You can't just play a long ball into Armstrong and expect it to come off. So, again, maybe there's something better to come from them. But as far as we're concerned, we did the right things. We just put effort in. For 90 minutes for me, I think we put effort in. Again, nothing spectacular. I mean, the substitutes coming on, other than the ones we've mentioned, Lyndon Gooch didn't really do an awful lot. He had that shot towards probably, 70, 80 minutes, something like that, which, you could argue he could do better, but that's why he's a defender, not a striker. Ben Pearson's settled in quite nicely. Didn't have much to do at all, but was just a bit of a rock. He just was told just to sit there and do nothing else, I think. And then Lloris didn't have any time to do anything. And Josh Lloren, same thing, really. Just didn't do an awful lot, put himself about. But for me, Dan, going forward, and we'll come to teams in a bit, I definitely want to see Baker and Berger as being the staple. And then he can mess around with the other one. I don't know about Kundal, Dan. I know I mentioned him briefly at the beginning, and we'll move on in a sec, but I just don't see where he fits in right now. I think he's clearly taking time to settle in. Where do you see his best position? Because he did a lot of running around, and that's fine, but beyond that, I didn't see what else he really offered personally.
I think he's an ace. He's definitely an ace, isn't he? In our midfield, there's two sitting in front of the holding midfielder, and I think he's definitely one of those two. But again, what he's lacking really is he's lacking that game that he's took by the scruff of the neck, if you like, and created a couple of chances that's won as a match or saved as a match. He's not been involved yet in that. There's a lot of like passing, keeping the ball moving, working the ball into areas and try and create chances, let others create chances. But him himself, he's going a lot of his work sort of just going on under the radar, isn't there? And I'd say he hasn't yet had that moment where you've gone, wow, that was a pass. Even if it doesn't lead to a goal, you think he's cut the defence open with a ball. He's yet to do that, isn't he, in a Stoke shirt? And his time at Plymouth, and obviously his time with Wolves as well, suggests we fell foul to him, didn't we? The under-21 playoff last season for the title or semi-finals for promotion to whatever, before they rejigged all the league, and he scored two in that game, and one of them was a great volley from outside the box, and he sort of ran the show. Just ran as ragged, and there's obviously ability in there. Wolves rate him highly. There was talk that they wanted, was it up to 6 million for him in January when we were looking at trying to maybe do the deal, and then we decided that was a bit too much, which I'm glad we did that.
we wanted to spend £1.5 million on him, so we were well priced out. And I mean, there's no way, I don't think any Stoke fan would condone a £6 million fee right now.
Not
at all.
No,
not of what we've seen. But I think in fairness to the guy as well, I mean, we've really mixed that midfield around recently. So I think any midfielder, unless you're really experienced, they're like the Bakers of this world, where they could just go with it and they can figure the game out. I think he's been unfortunate in the sense that he's been moved around all over the place, I think, a few times. He's had different partners. So I think if we do sign him in the summer, which you'd imagine Schumacher, he trusts him, you'd imagine he wants to, maybe we'll see the best of him next year. And I think the same will go with Bay, who, again, for me, a lot of running around, very little result. So I think he was always going to be one to settle in this season and probably see the best of him next year. But not really a criticism, Dan, to be honest. It was just more, he's lacking in that final result right now. But I think he will only get better.
Yeah, like I said before, I think he just needs that moment or that game where he just creates a chance or takes back scruff of the neck and wins the match for us, and you go, oh yeah, now I see what the fuss is about. I've heard about it. I've heard about it in a Wolves shirt. I've heard about it in a Plymouth shirt. Now I've seen it in a Stoke shirt. That's what we're missing. Because you all hear about players being bigged up, don't you? Whichever. But when you see yourself in your own club, that's when you get on board with it. So, yeah, for me, he needs that moment to happen yet. It's interesting as well. I mean, we'll talk about, obviously, Baker come back into the midfield today, last night, for what was a very important crunch game, and then obviously brought Jostler around and Ben Pearson, experienced players. Now, if you think in recent weeks, we've been playing with Berger, 22, Kundalu's 21, I believe, and obviously Bejourneau, 20. So an average, the average age of midfield's 21. And as good as, as good as those players are, and we've just talked about Kundal, and we're all well aware of the strengths and the abilities of Wouter Berger, and we all are really enthused, I think, by the promise and the improvements in Bejourneau. Do we need to maybe look at something like that and think, especially where we've been in the league, are we leaving ourselves too inexperienced in such a vital area in the midfield?
I think there's definitely an element of that. I think there's going to be games where we do need a Ben Pearson-like person in there who will just shut things down. I think we're going to lose him in the summer because I think he's going to want to get first-team football, and I'm not sure that Schumacher is going to be there to actually offer it him, if I'm honest with you. So I do agree. I think there's good having youth, there's good having some attacking players, flair players, but I still think you do need that experience in that, if we use the word earlier, that grit in there, even if it is just giving you an option in those types of games. So yeah, I still think there is an element that you can go too young, you can go too inexperienced. I think we've got to find that mix. And I know we tried to deal with that with the signings overall. We tried to get people in that 26 to 30-ish range. Didn't quite work out exactly how we wanted it, I don't think. But yeah, I definitely think there's an element of that, Dan, 100%.
How do you feel about the striker situation? Because obviously Campbell's not played the last two games. And actually, I saw there was reports at the last game of Blackburn, weren't they, that when the final sub was made with 50 minutes together, it was, people said that Campbell and Pearson walked off down the tunnel. Yet, obviously, people who were there said, well, actually, at the final whistle, Campbell was on the touchline, got up off the bench and was walking around. So that's, if he didn't go down, he came straight back out. But yeah, maybe just people seeing and just putting names to figures. Could have even been players who just come off, couldn't it, as well? But he obviously wasn't used at Blackburn. He had his time at Leicester, didn't he? He didn't really have a great game against them, but nobody did. Blackburn, he was an unused sub. Unused sub last night. Sounds like, the manager's not really, especially, a game against Blackburn when we were chasing it, and that Wesley has been used in both matches. So is he now above him in the pecking order? And Ryan Mai obviously played for the under-21s last week. Training still, this is his third week away from the first team. His second week back in training, but with the under-21s. How long do you think he needs to be out of that first team setup and proving himself to be putting the effort in and trying and doing backing up the words that he said he was going to do before you start integrating him back into training and the first team squad?
It wouldn't surprise me if he's there on Saturday. Wouldn't surprise me. I still, if they have made up in the nature that they claim they've, or making up, he's trying to make amends or whatever you want to call it. I still think that it will be either this Saturday or come the next game, which I think is Cardiff away, if I remember rightly, after that. Then I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the fold there because, Tyrese, I think you're right. I think he's seen the likes of Wesley getting ahead of him. That says everything he needs to know. And, let's be honest as well. If he was staying, he would have already signed a new contract, I think. I don't know if you still disagree with that, but I still think he would have signed a new deal. So I think he's off.
There was a post, wasn't there, on Instagram from Jordan Thompson last week. And obviously Jordan Thompson has Rangers connections. And it was like a picture of him and Tyrese and then sort of the handshakes emoji with the blue heart. And I just thought, that's interesting. Like it sounds either the deal might not be done, but there might the oven might be close to being done.
And if it's he's probably not get, something.
There's been interest from Rangers previously with him, hasn't there? They've wanted him for a long time. And let's be honest, if he's been at Stoke 7 years, he's seen us drop from a mid-table Premier League side to a bottom third Championship side. And whether people think he's part of the problem and the reason for that or not, when his contract comes up at 23-24, if he's got, you know, a massive European side in there, you know, guaranteed European football every season, guaranteed title challenge, you would say, top two in the Scottish League. If they're coming in for him, he's seen other Stoke players, you know, he's plenty of people he knows up there, aren't they? Half the Rangers squad he's played for Stoke, it feels like. You know, Matondo, Seema, Butland, just to name just a few. He could go up there, and I don't think you could begrudge him that, could you? If you looked at it from a level playing, like, without your Stoke tinted glasses on.
Oh, no, not at all, man. I think it's best for him anyway. You're right. He's, you know, he's 24 years old. He's clearly working his way down the pecking order. You know, he's going to be on a decent wage as well. You know, for all we know, if Schumacher doesn't fancy him, he sees an opportunity to maybe get someone in of a similar nature. I think, you know, he'd probably say that Ennis would even do more running around than maybe Tyrese would. So he can probably see Ennis as someone he could move around that front three line. So I think we do have options. And I think for Tyrese, Luke, he's not been the same Tyrese that we have seen in patches. So I think it's best for him that he goes. And if Rangers themselves, you know, they wanted to pay a lot of money for him in the past. So if they can get him on a free, I mean, that's a no-brainer for them. It's a no-brainer for him. Gets himself a decent wage because he's a free as well. So I think it's probably just one of them moments where we shake hands and say, Luke, thanks for your efforts. Whether you think they could have been good enough or not is irrelevant. No, thanks for your efforts and all the best. And I think that's what we have to do, really, for me. And we have to move on. He's clearly not staying. So for me, Dan, I wouldn't even be surprised if he doesn't make, you know, the bench at some point. I think if Ryan comes back, you've got Ennis. I mean, how many strikers do you need on the bench? You know, we've got Haksabanovic, we've got Manhoof. There's only so many attacking players you're going to put.
Vidigal didn't even make the bench.
Even Vidigal didn't make the bench, exactly. So I think at that point, that's where you might see, or we may have seen some of the last of Tyrese Campbell, potentially. So, anyway, we digress. But yeah, look, for me, I think good overall, not amazing. We had less possession. We had more shots on target for once, actually. We had 5 shots on target. So certainly an improvement on that point. And I guess the question to you, Dan, do you think that 3 points gives us more likely to be safe? Or I'm not saying it makes us safe because there's too many games to go, but that 3 points probably can't be underestimated, I don't think. I think that keeps it in our hands, would you say?
Yeah, it's massive. You've got a first home win since the 21st of October, a first home win for a new manager. You've got a clean sheet as well after so many goals conceded recently. It ends 4 consecutive defeats. And with the Huddersfield beating Sunderland, it keeps us out of the relegation zone. We've now got a 6-point gap. In Millwall, I think at QPR, they've got an easier game, I believe, at the weekend. They might have Sheffield Wednesday. QPR are away at Bristol City and then, you know, on Saturday in the next match. And then they've got Rotherham at home. So, I mean, these games do then get more difficult for them. They've got Leicester, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Sunderland. So, really, they'll be looking. I mean, we're 6 points ahead of them. If they don't get 2 wins from Bristol City away at Rotherham at home, I can't see them catching up where we currently are against Leicester, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Sunderland. We're 6 games down the line at that point. And that's not taking into account what we're going to pick up over the next 6 games. I just think if we'd have lost, we'd have been in the relegation zone, still no home win, conceding more goals. It would have been awful. The heads, they were so low. And I think it would have just compounded all that and made it even more of a mess situation. Right now, they'll bounce into training today. Well, they will. They might have to drag themselves because I reckon there's some weary bodies because they did put the bodies on the line. They ran. There was a load of effort. Like I said at the start, they answered a lot of questions about how much they want it and how bothered they are by it all, how much effort they all want to put in. And, you know, they did that last night. So now they've got that belief as well. They know they can fight. They might not have believed it before. They might have believed in the same with the fans, thinking, actually, I'm not sure we can do this. You know, and they're looking around at their teammates, thinking, I'm not sure we're up for a fight here. But now they know they are. Now they know they can do that. Now when the backs are against the wall with 10, 15 minutes to go and they're hanging on to a lead, they'll know they've got something to remember. You know, they've done it previously. They've got that. They'll have that belief. They'll also be a lot more relaxed because there's that gap. You know, the games aren't... The games are still massively important until we get probably another, 10, 15 points. But you're going to find it a lot easier to get them when they're not, like I say, everything's not feeling like the pressure cooker situation they were involved in before.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's just it. It keeps it in our hands. We know we're going to probably lose a lot more games between now and Huddersfield, but I just think, like you said, we can just maybe grind out the odd point here, the odd point there, and if the likes of the performance against QPR is... how QPR were, if that's how they are, and I'm not sure about Huddersfield, they seem to have a little bit more about them, but if that's how those teams down there are, and Millwall are on the massive slide, then I just think we'll have enough to get out of it. And I use the words on Radio Stoke, by the skin of our teeth. I don't think we will be racing away from that bottom mark at all, racing away from the relegation zone rather, but we'll have enough. Enough personalities just about to get ourselves through and over to Shimmy in the summer. But anyway, Dan, let's move on because we need to close this off. So, man of the match, I'm going to ask you before you give us the results, who was your man of the match from yesterday?
It seems a bit daft to say, It seems a bit easy to just say Berger yet again. I think he maybe did have the best performance. He scored the winning goal. He's just a ridiculous talent. But I would say for improving the side coming in, I'll give it to Lewis Baker just for a change.
Okay, interesting. I don't think I've ever done this before. Michael Rose. I think Rose gets
nice.
It. He just really impressed me last night. And hopefully that continues because whether McNally is... I thought McNally was still ropey, but yeah, Michael Rose 100% gets it for me. But yeah, easily Berger or Baker as well, mate, so I don't necessarily disagree at all. What do the actual poll results say?
So the actual poll results said that Wouter Berger does pick up yet another man of the match. So yeah, he got over 50% of the vote to just get himself another Man of the Match award. McNally was the centre back actually that picked up a few votes, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got 9. Michael Rose only got the 1, so you know you should get yourself on there.
Wow. I think that is I did vote for Rose, so that's me.
But yeah, second place was Ennis actually with 14% of the vote, and Baker was third with 11%. I think, you know, 1-11. Thompson was really ropey in the first half. He was half time. He was the only one that I thought, you know, you need to pick it up a bit here. But after that, he did in the second half. And I thought, you know what? There isn't one in there you would say you had a bad game come full time.
No, I agree with you.
We have got some audio from Ben at QPR. So shall we have a listen to that to round it off?
Hello, Ben here from the W12 podcast, QPR fan. Gave you a little preview of the match before the game, so just giving you a bit of a post-match view. I've had to give myself a day to calm down a little bit because it's just frustrating being a QPR fan. But anyway, just a quick reflection on the game. I thought, it was yours as well. It was our biggest game of the season so far, and we've had quite a lot of 6-pointers, and we haven't turned up. And it's just no different really for us. I thought we started well in the first sort of 5-10 minutes, We had a couple of chances. And we're just terrible at set pieces. I think we've conceded 14 now. I think the record's 18, so we're going to go close to that this season. You know, good header and good finish from Berger, who I thought was excellent, by the way. Probably the difference on the day, actually, between the two teams. I thought he was really, really good. And when he went off, I thought possibly that, you know, we could step it up a bit and try and get you through midfield, but we were just really poor. Didn't really do anything, a bit huffed and puffed a little bit, which was frustrating. From my views on Stoke, I thought you were kind of there for the taking a little bit, especially in the first sort of 30-35 minutes. I thought if we could get a goal here, I thought the crowd would turn and I thought that we would go on and win. But you got your goal and you sat quite deep and I think you had a solid five at the back after the goal, and made it difficult for us. And, you know, we had balls in the box, but, you know, three big centre-halves, it was always going to be a big ask. We just couldn't find that final ball, which was frustrating. But I think, you know, you just wanted to win. I think that was more important for you than anything, was just to get those 3 points and get yourself a bit clearer of the relegation zone, which I don't blame you. It's exactly what we wanted to do. I would have took a 1-0 win any day. but I think probably that'll be okay for you now. You should be able to go on a bit of a run. I think we're in huge trouble. A tough game away at Bristol City next, and then a big game at Rotherham at home. But I thought, just quickly to end, yeah, I thought Berger was a cut above everyone else on the pitch. I thought Thompson had a really good game, left back for you. Smith for us is nippy and quick, and Sinclair's quick, and I thought I don't think that's his normal position, is it? I thought he was really good for you guys. And I actually quite liked the guy up front that you got from Blackburn, Ennis, is it? He was a bit more physical and a lot of energy and I thought he was better than I can remember him being. I'm not sure if up striker is where he played or if it was sort of on the wing, but I thought he was quite effective. And I thought you defended quite well, considering what I heard before the game about your defending. But I think that's just as much about how poor we were or are. Sinclair was quite isolated up there up top. I thought he did quite well, but just no one around him within 10-15 yards, which was frustrating. But good luck for the season, and if we're in the same league next season, I'm sure I'll be around to give a match analysis next season. Cheers, bye.
Cheers for that, Ben. Right, so I think it's time we get into the news. It seems pretty brief. The news is not much coming about this week. Obviously, we mentioned all the last week's games and that in the early pod earlier this week. But yeah, the under-18s, they haven't got a game this weekend. Just a reminder on that. The women don't have a game scheduled this weekend. The under-21s do, though. They're at home to Brighton. Match being played at Clayton Wood, 2 p.m. kickoff on Monday. So Monday the 19th, that's the under-21s next fixture. Might even have a Ryan May in there, might it? News-wise, so obviously, with the last week, we recorded before the fans forum, if you like, with Ricky Martin, Steve Schumacher and John Coates. So we didn't really cover that. So just a few things that you may have missed. I mean, there's a few headline acts, but I'm sure you've read all the main headlines. These are little things that I saw underneath that you maybe haven't seen. There's disappointment at the current position was given. The goalkeeper situation will be addressed in the summer, but it will allow a pathway for Tommy Simkin to eventually get to the first team. They're not going to do it so it blocks his career progression. Training camp is being sorted and pre-season friendlies
are being finalised. So they will be going away this summer. The under-first team and the under-21s, it's something they did last summer where they all went away together. Steven Schumacher likes the idea, thinks it's a great thing. They will be doing it again this summer. The first team, they said, will be a lot less hectic transfer-wise this summer. There will be no 18 to 20 signings coming through the door. That was a real one-off. They're looking to build on the squad, you know, maybe get rid of a few, bring a few in and, you know, manoeuvre that. But it won't be a massive overhaul like last summer. Obviously, the stuff about Ryan Meyer was mentioned. It's not available as it stands. He said, we had a week at home and now he's just completed his second week with the under-21s. And obviously, he did play in that under-21 fixture against Liverpool last week. So, yeah, there's a few little things that maybe haven't been pointed out so much. Obviously, the Ryan Meyer one has, but the other stuff may have gone under the radar a bit. Yeah, other than that, there's not really much to report news-wise. We've been a busy week fretting over losing to QPR, haven't we? That didn't happen, thankfully. So, yeah, let's now move into this weekend's game against Coventry.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So, Coventry, we've played them on 71 occasions. We have 30 victories, 11 draws and 30 defeats. At home, we've played them 35 times with 19 victories, 4 draws and just the 12 losses. However, we have no home win since 2006 against Coventry, and we've won just one of the last 8 games home and away since 2018. But what a glorious victory it was at the Rico last season, or whatever it's called, the CBS Arena. Well, I don't know, whatever it's called these days, it'll forever be the Rico to me. We have played them in February, though, 4 times in the league previously. 3 wins and a draw. So we are unbeaten in 4 February league games against Coventry. If that doesn't give you confidence, I don't know what will. Stephen Schumacher's record against Coventry and against Mark Robbins is just the one singular game, which was Coventry 1, Plymouth 0 in November of last year, so just a few months ago, whilst Robbins has faced Stoke now on 9 occasions. He has been victorious 4 times, the Potters have been victorious twice, and there's 3 matches ended in a stalemate. The 2 losses versus Stoke was a 1-0 Carling Cup tie when he was manager of Rotherham in 2008, and the other being the 4-0 win that we just mentioned in April 2023. He's got 7 points from a possible 9 from his league visits to the 365. So, yes, that's bringing us back down to earth a little bit there, isn't it? Stoke's home form, 19 points, puts them 20th in the home table. And both teams have scored in only 2 of our last 10 home games. We haven't seen many goals, have we? Last 5 matches, Stoke have 3 points, which were the 3 picked up against QPR on Wednesday night, puts us 21st in the form table. But seeing as those 3 were all coming out of our most recent game, I suppose the only way is up from there, isn't it, over the next 4 matches? Coventry's away form, they've also collected 19 points from all their games on their travels, which puts them 10th in the away table. The only win, the only loss in their last 16 matches was a 2-1 defeat away at Norwich, but they had 10 men for the last 20 minutes, which was when they conceded that goal. So yeah, they are bang in form. However, you would potentially think they would be higher up in this table. So the last 5 matches, form-wise, 8 points, and they are 12th in the form table. So, both these sides have been awarded three penalties a season and both have scored just one. They're now, Coventry have joined us this week, they're now the all, we're the only two sides to have missed more penalties than we've taken. Obviously, we've been awarded more than one as well. Only Sheffield Wednesday have failed to score more than Stoke's 13 times a season, while only three sides have failed to score less than Coventry's five. Only five sides have kept more clean sheets than both Stoke and Coventry, who were both on nine clean sheets for the season. So, yeah, if it was on clean sheets, we'd actually be in the playoffs. Which, when you think of our defence and the worry we've had over them, it's crazy, really, isn't it? both Stoke with 198 and Coventry with 214 are in the top five in the league for corners won. So maybe expect a lot of corners in the match on Saturday. Now, this is an interesting one and maybe something the Stoke need to pick up on. Coventry have scored a massive 17 goals this season from second shots. So things like rebounds where the keeper saved it, it's come back out and someone's tapped it in, or a shot that's been blocked, fell to someone else and put it in. That is more than double anyone else in the league, bar Ipswich. Ipswich are on 11. Everyone else has got... the Coventry got more than double everybody else. This says to me they always follow up on shots. So they've always got somebody following up for any rebounds or any spillages. So the keeper's going to have good hands on Saturday. And if he does save and he can't hold it, he's going to have to push it into a safe area, you know, get it good wide places. If we block, we're going to have to be making sure that we are following in on shots as well. And alert to any sort of, like, say, any rebounds or any balls bobbling about. Errors. Now, errors don't seem to lead to shots in Stoke games. So we have the least shots from defensive errors. Only two. Only twice all season as a defender made a mistake and we've capitalised on it to have a shot. Not even a goal, just a shot. Just twice. But we also have conceded the least amount of shots from defensive errors. Only four. So those numbers as well are quite a way away from the rest of the league. So it seems like our defence don't create or don't give the opposition the chance to shoot from errors very often, but we don't capitalise when defenders make errors, or we don't force defenders to make errors, maybe. Anyway, Stoke have used a league-high 35 players this season. Coventry have used a league-low 24. Will that, you know, busy periods, three game weeks, will that start to show in legs on Saturday? Who knows? Coventry have a league high four own goals in their favour this season, but have yet to score one themselves. That rounds off your stats. Now into the referee. So James Bell, now you might remember him, he was the referee on against Ipswich on New Year's Day. He wasn't the referee, though, who sent off Jordan Thompson. He was the guy who took the whistle from the first minute. He got injured into the first half. 17 games he's ref this season, 69 yellows, 3 red cards, 2 penalties, 12 home wins, 2 draws and just the 3 away victories. He's ref Stoke 4 times, given us 13 yellows, no reds, no penalties, 1 win, 1 draw, 2 defeats. He's refed us 3 times this season, all about 365 Stadium, the win against Watford, the draw against Ipswich and the loss against Southampton. That free kick that Southampton scored is the only goal we've conceded with him reffing. That's interesting, isn't it? So the only goal we conceded in the 3 this season was that sort of dodgy, I think, is it fair to call it a dodgy? I think it's fair to call it a dodgy free kick. Coventry, he's only reffed them the once. He gave them 1 yellow, no reds, there was no penalties, and it was a 0-0 draw away at Bristol City in October 2022. Yes. On this day, nice positive one. Simon Sturridge scored the only goal against his former club, Birmingham, as Stoke went up to third in Division 1. So what is now the Championship? But back then it was Ainsley Division 1. It was the highest position we'd been in since relegation from the top flight in 1985, some 10 years previous. So, yeah, here's your stats, your ref stats on this day. Now, let's listen to Graham McGarry and also our friends from Coventry.
Hello there once again, you fellow Potter's predictors. This is Graham McGarry checking in ahead of the home game coming up at the weekend against Coventry City, where you must be feeling more at ease after that fine 3 points come your way on Wednesday. It's been a long time in coming, and it will bring a bit of relief to everybody connected to Stoke City. Well, they've got to try and build on that particular 3 points. It was a tense, nervy night, and I'm not expecting it to be any different this Saturday afternoon. They take on the Coventry City side, and once again, under the very shrewd managementship of Mark Robbins, they came back twice in the midweek game down at Plymouth to bring back a point to the Ricoh Arena. But Stoke will hope that those home fans can get behind them once again and hopefully get some more points on the board as they try to move quickly away from the bottom three places in the Championship. It's still tight, it's still difficult, but it's a sign that it could just be turning, especially after the win on Wednesday night. Can they make it 2 wins on the trot? I don't quite think so. They'll have to settle for a low-scoring draw. Stoke 1, Coventry City 1.
Hi, my name's Glenn. I'm part of the All Things Sky Blue podcast. You can find us on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, and all podcast platforms. We do a match preview show that will be out on Thursday afternoon, previewing the game, and also we do a space on Twitter on Sundays with our match reviews and match previews on the week's games. So I've been asked to give my thoughts on the Stoke City game. It's a bit weird to know what to expect from Stoke at the moment. Obviously, before the win against QPR last night, as I'm speaking to you on Thursday, it seemed a bit of an unhappy camp. This Stoke seemed a bit of a mess with players wanting to leave and players misbehaving in training, etc. So it makes it quite interesting. Recently, Stoke have been quite a happy hunting ground for Cov, and we've done quite well against the Potters. Ironically, the last time that Cov failed to score was the game at the CBS against Stoke. We've scored in the 19 games since, but the clean sheets have dried up. I would probably say we're a bit like Middlesbrough were last season. We've got plenty of goals. Our attacking talent with Sakamoto, O'Hare, Palmer, Hadji Wright, Ellis Sims and Matty Godden is up there probably with some of the best attackers in the league. Unfortunately, we are leaking goals quite often at the moment. So, on the positive, if we go 1-0 down, we're never out of the games because we've got the capability to score at least 2 goals. But I'm not sure whether long-term we can keep that up. So, I think if Stoke are to get a result against us, probably going to have to score 2 goals. And Stoke's obviously record, especially at home in terms of scoring goals, isn't very prolific. It'll be interesting to see. We rested a few people on Wednesday against Plymouth. Obviously, we got a last-minute goal in Robin's time to get a 2-2 draw. Callum O'Hare was rested from the squad completely. There is a slight question mark whether he'll be back on Saturday for the game at Stoke. I would be very surprised if he isn't. He makes a huge difference for us. He's actually turned into the player that we all hoped he would. The sad thing is that he's out of contract in the summer and we're likely to lose him on a free. But his one criticism was his end product in terms of his finishing. And he's come back from his ACL injury and his finishing has been superb. He's not as wasteful as he has been, and he's been a standout performer in some key wins for us. Most notably the win against Leicester City when we were 1-0 down and 2 cracking finishes from O'Hare basically helped us win the game 3-1. So in terms of other changes, I don't think we'll probably make massive changes. There might be a change at left back. We might switch Jake Bidwell for Jay Da Silva. I would imagine Hadji Wright will come in and start left wing. Ellis Sims, as he scored, I think he's got a start ahead of Matty Godden. And then I would imagine there might be a change in midfield, possibly with Joel Latabodier switching to right back to give Milan Van Erwijk a rest. He looked a bit leggy on
Wednesday's game, and probably Josh Eccles comes into midfield alongside Victor Torp. In terms of the Cov players to watch out for, Victor Torp has been an absolute standout performer for us. We picked him up from Norwegian football. He's Danish. He's came out of the blue. We paid a couple of million pounds for him. He's really good on the ball. He can strike a ball cleanly. He's got an eye for a pass. He's good defensively. He's made a couple of great recovery tackles. And he's our set-piece specialist. So he's one to watch out for. And definitely, if the ball's 30 yards, 25 yards out, he can definitely ping a shot in. As showed on his debut when he scored an absolute worldie against Sheffield Wednesday. So, yeah, that would be the other ones. And the main player I think he's been standout for us recently, along with Callum O'Hare. In terms of the Stoke City players that I'll be worried about, Wout Berger has obviously been a standout performer for you guys in the games that I've seen. He obviously went off, I believe, injured on Wednesday night. So that would be a massive loss for you guys. I'd be interested to see how Torp and Josh Eccles shape up against your midfield, because obviously you've got quite a few good midfielders. Obviously Daniel Johnson's quite an experienced championship midfielder. Obviously is also you've got Josh Lovren and Lewis Baker, so that'll be an interesting battle. I think obviously the two players that will stand out will be Michael Rose and Luke McNally. Obviously they're ex-Coventry City. McNally was quite heavily wanted by us in the summer, and we missed out on him. Obviously we went and got Bobby Thomas and Liam Kitchen, and McNally seems not to have kicked on to the levels that he was at Cov. Michael Rose, great player for us in the COVID Champions season where we got promoted from League One, but just very injury prone, couldn't string a run of games together, and he actually dropped out because of a few bad results we had where we leaked goals where he was playing, and he was the most experienced pro. But no, he's it'll just be typical if he pops up with a goal on Saturday, Michael Rose, because he was always a threat off set pieces. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle Ellis Sims and Hadji Wright, as I think the physical pacey strikers were always the ones that tended to cause McNally a bit of trouble. I look back to the playoff final where obviously Adebayo and Morris caused him quite a few problems, so that'll be interesting. And I think the other weakness that Cov may exploit is obviously we've got Sakamoto out wide. Stoke don't really have a recognised fit left back at the moment. I think that's somewhere we could exploit. The other players that I do like at Stoke, I've always liked Tyrese Campbell, but I don't think he'll start. And I think Daniel Everson's a very competent championship goalkeeper. So I'm surprised given the amount of goals that you guys have been leaking recently. I think there'll be goals, and it wouldn't surprise me. It could possibly be another 2-2, but realistically, Cov need the win, so I'm going to go 3-1, Cov.
Thanks for that, Graham, and also thank you to Glenn and the guys at Coventry. So, big game, Mike, in respect of we do still need points, don't we, to guarantee survival and keep that buffer, a healthy one, if you like. Just that we aren't directly in the firing line this week now, are we?
No, exactly that, mate. We're not. We're not in the firing line. I'm still sticking to what I kind of said before. Like, Coventry, a good team. They're winning well at the minute, home and away. I think with our home form, despite the fact that, you know, yes, we beat obviously QPR, I still think the home form is still obviously a big concern, and it's going to continue to be for the rest of the season. You know, we're not going to find a magic formula out of nothing. So yeah, look, I'm going to stick with what I said the other day. I think we will lose this one. I still think it'd be more spirited than maybe we've seen in previous weeks. So yeah, it's not gonna be easy, Dan. But at least, like you've said, we're not going into this having lost to Blackburn, lost to QPR, and now absolutely desperate against one of the better teams in the division. So it's going to be a very, very tough game. They know where the net is. They don't concede many goals. So yeah, it's going to be extremely challenging.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously they've got like Haji Wright up front, haven't they? And I was looking at his stats earlier on, and he misses a lot of chances, but he gets himself in the position to finish a lot. So I think he's got a decent amount of goals, and he's their top scorer, top assists. But I think XG per 90 minutes, so if you like, the amount of goals he should have for every 90 minutes he's on the pitch is the highest out of any player in the league. So you think, when you think about like the chances he's getting himself into, the positions he's getting himself into, and the chances they're creating for him, he is or should be banging the goals in more than any player in the league. I think he's had a couple of injuries which have maybe knocked his overall figure down. And like I say, he gets to the positions. I'm not quite sure finishing is his best attribute. But the defence are going to have their hands full by the sounds of that, aren't they? They've got a player there who knows how to get himself in those positions. And also, sorry, just before you come in, he did get two goals last weekend, didn't he? He scored twice in 3 minutes. I know one was a penalty. But he still did 92 in that game against Millwall on his head.
Yeah, it's hard to add an awful lot onto what you've kind of said, really. I suppose what we're going to have to do well to really stop Coventry this week, I think we're going to have to do what we actually did in similar capacity with QPR. I think we've got to keep it compact. You know, we've got to be able to close down quickly. You know, don't leave any gaps. Don't be stupid and naive in fullback positions. I think Thompson needs to be a little bit deeper, like you know, we saw probably second half against QPR. We can't leave those gaps open. You know, they've got some pace, they've got some quality that can definitely hurt you. So if it means that we have to play a bit more of a defensive game and hit on the break, I know we don't really want to do that as the home team, but again, a bit like Leicester, you can't just come out and start attacking teams and expecting to, you know, outscore them, because we know we have not got the quality to do that. So I think we need to hold firm, not necessarily saying two banks of four. We don't need to be that defensive, but no risks, no gaps in the fullback positions. McNally and Rose, for me, can hold their own in the centre. I think they will be able to battle off most strikers in this division and just keep it tight. You know, even if it means bringing in the likes of, I don't know, like say Baker, I think, needs to start again, and just have him in that position that we saw him in the other night. Like, you know, just having that solidity. You sit in front of that defence, you know, try and break up play, let Berger, do his job. And for me, I think we drop Kundal. I think by dropping Kundal, we probably bring in probably Josh Laurent, I think, is maybe another one that might be worth thinking about, even potentially Pearson. I don't think he fancies Pearson, which is why I don't think he would do that. But I'm all for letting Berger be our creative man and Baker and, you know, Loren just be the workhorses in the midfield.
Yeah, I think you bang on there. I think you've got to. Coventry seem to be playing this season with a lot more, with the ball on the floor a lot more, if you like, without being disrespectful to how they played before. I think they've always been a little bit direct under Robbins. And I think, obviously, the fact that they could sell Gyökeres in the summer and Hamer, they've been able to bring in a lot of players like Haji Wright, but you know, people like that who can play a bit. And also, of course, Callum O'Hare. Now, Callum O'Hare's just come back from a serious injury. He's out of contract in the summer. And he is, for me, one of the most gifted playmakers in this league. And I think he's come and he's sort of hit the ground running, coming back from a long-term injury, which is, you know, quite impressive, to be honest. But I think now he's just sort of firing again. And he's looking to be in the Premier League next year, whether that's with or without Coventry. I know I'm pretty sure, and say, unless I've missed it, I'm sure he hasn't signed a new contract at Coventry. And I'm sure he's well got his sights on like say a big move in the summer if Coventry don't go up. So he's playing both for the team and for his own future. And I think Coventry are benefiting from having a player like, you know, a player as talented as that, who is basically excelling, knowing that this is his chance to put himself in the shop window, if you like. And if in the process he gets Coventry promoted, then he probably ends up staying there as well anyway, signing an extension at Coventry. But he's definitely, like I say, if you bring somebody like Pearson in and just to do a bit of a number on her hair, just to, you know, track him around and best he can, maybe not man-to-man in the extreme like you see some players do, but definitely, you know, to keep an half an eye on him at all costs, at all times, I think that might be the safer the way to go, because I don't see there being many goals in this game at all. You know, this is Stoke, let's be honest. There very rarely is many goals, especially in the home games. So we can't switch off and let, you know, O'Hare, you know, put something to do for Wright, for example, or, you know, even stick the ball in the net himself. We've got to be on it at all times defensively to get something from this match.
Yeah, I agree, which actually is why I would probably... I wouldn't say we switch it up too much, Dan. Like I mentioned, obviously, the midfield. I would very much be tempted to put Junior back at right back, if I'm honest with you. I don't think we can really have Kiana's, and I think Kiana's lack of defensive stability and awareness for me. So I think I'd put Junior back on the right of the defence. I would actually drop Bay and bring in Manhoof, I think. He's going to make changes. He's going to make at least a couple. So I think those are the two main ones that I would have in the team. Ennis, I think, will keep his place. Who you would play in, you know, Junior's position from obviously QPR, it could be, again, another bit of a workhorse. It could be Lloris down that right-hand side, just because he will run. He will track back. I don't think he's been very hot and cold, Lloris. I'm not a massive fan of his, but I do see the value that he could add on that right-hand side. Tyrese, I don't think, is not the right position for him right now. He's, as we talked about earlier, he's probably not in the right frame of mind. You know, you could even keep, you know, Bay on the left and put Manuf on the right. You know, I think he can play on either side. So we've got options. So I'm expecting around three changes. I don't think it's going to be wholesale changes at all.
No, I know Schumacher does like to ring the changes, doesn't he? I mean, we were told that when he joined, that, you know, he's a manager who, I think, does more changes than any other in the division, I think was what we were told by Aaron and the guys at Plymouth at Argyle Life. But, yeah, I can't see there being many. I mean, obviously, we've got three game weeks, so whether he puts legs in for that. I've picked my team without Berger in it, just because, obviously, the easy thing is to put him in there because he's definitely going to play into it. But if he is, that he's not fit and he doesn't make it, this is the team I'm going with. Obviously, if he is there, then he will be definitely coming into that midfield. do you want to go with your teammate first?
Yeah, sure. So just to summarise then, we're going to go, obviously, Iverson. We're going to have Junior, McNally, Rose, Thompson. The three in the midfield, I'm going to include him. So Berger, Baker and Pearson. And then on the front three is Lloris, Ennis and Bay. I know I kind of mentioned about Manhoof, but maybe not quite yet. Maybe that's one of the impact players off the bench. So, yeah, I'll go with that.
I wonder whether Manhoof didn't come on at all on Wednesday with a bit of rotation and freshness in mind. Like, picked his attackers for Wednesday and then he's thinking, OK, I'm now making sure that I've got at least one set of fresh legs in the front line in the next match. So I think out of all positions, it is your attackers that feel it even more, isn't it? Because obviously if they are the ones who are lacking a bit of sharpness, a bit of freshness, that's where it's most difficult to influence the game. I think maybe because defenders don't necessarily have that burst needed as often as forwards. You can sort of get away with it a bit more. But I've gone similar to you in that I've got Iverson in goal. I've actually gone with Hoover, McNally and Rose as a back three. Junior at right wing back, Thompson at left wing back. So I'm thinking that maybe when we've got the ball,
everyone can sort of shift into a back four then, and either wing back can really bomb on and help the other forward out. I've got Pearson holding, and then I've got Loren and Baker. That's a very experienced centre midfield for me. And I've got Ennis, and I think I said this last week, but I'm going to sort of go with it again. So Ennis up front and Manhoff just sort of like, you know, a bit of a free roll buzzing either side. And like I say, when we get the ball, the three can become a four, and one of the wing backs can really bomb on and then help out Manhoff and Ennis up front. So that's my thoughts and what I would do there. And I think that offers adequate protection as well to the defence with that midfield. Bear in mind, like I say, Coventry have got some quite creative midfielders in there.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. As you rightly point out, it could very well have been keeping a bit of fresh legs on there. I think there's a few different ways you can go, which is nice, in that attacking front. I think defensively, you're never changing the back, you know, the McNally and Rose partnership now. I never thought I'd say that, if I'm honest with you. But yeah, you can't change them two. And I think Thompson, while he's got no competition there at the minute, unless he decided to play Junior at left wing back and have Kiana on the right, if he didn't want to drop Kiana, I mean, I wouldn't do it. But we've seen that Junior, when he did come in and play on the left-hand side once or twice, he actually didn't look out of place for me. So we've got a few options, but yeah, I think both of us are going to be pretty spot on as far as the defence goes. And as far as prediction goes, Dan, I've got to go a 2-1 Coventry win, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can understand why. You know, we're still baby steps and all that, aren't we? We're getting there. So you go 3-1. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw, which is the prediction I did have before the game as well. So we're both actually sticking with our original predictions from before the victory over QPR. But yeah, I can see it being 1-1. I don't think there'll be many goals in it. I think we'll be happy with the points. And they may just think point just keeps their sort of unbeaten run going a bit. Mentioned in the stats there, you know, they've only had one defeat in the last 16 matches, and that was when they had 10 men for the last 20 minutes and then conceded right at the end. So, you know, they're obviously on a great run. They have had a few draws and then they may have to settle for another one. And I think if you offered Stephen Schumacher 4 points from these two home games, he probably would have said, you know what, I'll take that right now, the position that we were in.
God, yeah. Like, mate, I'd be delighted with a draw. 100%. I think most Stoke fans would go into the weekend. It'd just be, again, an extra little point we're picking up. And it takes us, what, into Cardiff then, which we don't really have a great record against Cardiff away from home. But, you know, again, they're not amazing. They're okay. We'll come to that bridge when it's time to talk about it. But, yeah, I'd say...
They're another team that are sort of dropping down a bit, not to the extent of a Millwall or a Swansea, but... They have dropped away from the playoff picture. Just obviously, you know, there is a lot of teams still in around this fight. Just to say that these are the fixtures for the weekend. So QPR, they're obviously the one that we are watching, you know, the closest, aren't we, out of everybody. They've got Bristol City away, so by no means a gimme. Bristol City, some good recruitment in January, started to pay off. They beat Southampton, didn't they, in the weekend, did their 25 match unbeaten run, which is what a run that was. Millwall, I've got Sheffield Wednesday at home, so what a massive game that is.
Wow. Especially for Millwall. I'd love to watch that one. I mean, it's not a great one for the neutral, realistically, but the for what's on the line there, I mean, Millwall they are on a huge slide. I actually haven't seen their run of results, but every week it seems like they're losing at the minute. So, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday win that, Millwall fans must be really squeaky bum. Like, basically like we were pre-Blackburn.
I think as well, I mean, I might be wrong here, but I think they might have Leicester next week as well, Millwall. So that just makes that Sheffield Wednesday game even bigger, doesn't it? Huddersfield are at home to Hull. That's no gimme, is it? But Huddersfield will be flying after beating Sunderland. So Birmingham have got Sunderland at home. Obviously, Tony Mowbray against his old club.
Sunderland will be one
worth noting.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, it's not Leicester. They're away to Southampton, so it's just as odd.
Yeah. I knew it was a real tough game they got coming up. But yeah, Birmingham, Sunderland, so that's going to be an easy game. Blackburn are away at Preston. They've come into a bit of form now as well, haven't they? 10 points in the last five games, I noticed. And Swansea have got Ipswich. So,
Swansea are going to be feeling it.
Yeah, you feel for Millwall, that's a massive game, isn't it? And there's not really any of them there that you would... Yeah, I mean, obviously, you wouldn't fancy them to win many games because that's why they're down the bottom of the league. But there's no sort of gimme points there, is there, with any of them? So it could be, I mean, this is a championship. It could go completely the other way. But yeah, I can't see more than one or two wins coming out of that lot, to be honest. One of them,
this could go to the wire.
Yeah.
It could really go to the wire. And guess what the last game of the season is for Millwall? Away to Swansea.
Oh,
what a game that could be if it carries on this kind of trajectory. It could be whoever wins, whoever loses that goes up or down.
Wow. Right. I'll just give you a quick Super Six update. I restored the 10-point advantage over you this week, Mike. I got 13, you got 10. Takes me to 286 in 55th place. You've got 276 and in 68th. Top person this week was actually Adam Byron, who got 19 points. Wow, that's impressive. It's not bad. I didn't think we did about 13 and 10, and someone just whacks out a good 19. Overall is Sean Flanagan, 353. Nicholas Yates has got 345. Michael Gadget, 343, making up the top three. Now, Gaffer, there's been a big change at Gaffer. Top place now is at Thurgood Joe. 115 points he got this week to 2597 overall. Stoker's Bay relegated down to second with 2584, despite scoring 100-plus points himself. Whilst Mr. Kadig got 112, taking him to 2550. Top scorer for the week was Saul Lauser with 132, whilst I got 86, 1782 overall. And this is the big, massive news. I'm out of 36 after what feels like an eternity. I'm up to 35th place. Get in there. Come on.
Go on, Sean. You're on the march now. You're going to head for that number one, yeah?
That's the one. Right, so... We mentioned, didn't we, Six Towns Challenge. We mentioned, didn't we, that last when we played QPR, that there was a few players there picking up a load of bookings or like double figures for bookings. And we mentioned that Ben Pearson was on 11 yellow cards. Now, as far as I can find the records for, and this goes back to the mid-90s, so that's a little bit of a hint as to how far we're going back with this. There's only six players who've ever got more than 11 yellow cards in a season for Stoke. Can you name me the six players? And I will give you a clue. The one for the longest to go was 2001-2002.
Okay. So any time between now and 2001/2, most yellow cards, yeah?
Yeah. Who's got the most yellow cards in a season? There's three with 12, one with 13, and two got 14.
Okay, this ain't going to be great for me if I'm on his ball, whatever. I mean, Ben Pearson, I imagine, must be up there, yeah?
He is not. He isn't. This is the most he's got in one season. So he's got 11 this season, but obviously he only joined second half of last season, didn't he? So he didn't pick up more than 11 last year either.
Oh, I swear I read somewhere that he had 12. Okay, I'll trust you, mate. I'll trust you. I swear I was looking up previously about whether he's ever going to get another a red card, and I swear I saw that he had 12 on year, but I will bow to your superior knowledge on that because I'm sure yours is probably more accurate.
He may well have done. He probably just didn't do it for Stoke.
Okay. Trying to think now. Who was prolific in, say, like the Premier League years?
Yeah, so just to let you know, Mike, in 2017-18, Ben Pearson got 16 yellows and one red for Preston. The year after, 2018-19, he got 14 yellows and three reds.
Jesus, okay. That is ridiculous for a start. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, right. So let me think back. So it's got to be someone who's proud of it. Who used to get loads? Who they used to get a few? Oh, so yeah, this is my memory is honestly, it's like a sieve at times, mate.
Well, you've got three lives, so if you think of any names, you can always, you know, if you dip into the water with one.
Okay. I'm going to go to Glenn Whelan. So go on.
I was going to say, I would say five out of the six, you would probably go, yeah, that makes sense. There's probably one on here where you went, oh, really? Who I looked at and went, oh, really? But the other five, I was like, not really that surprised at.
Oh, God, there's going to be some obvious ones then, is there?
Just name all the people who are around kicking people, to be honest.
Okay, I'll go with Robert Huth then.
Robert Huth, he is one of the two with 14 yellows. So 14 yellows from 49 games in the 2011-2012 season.
Okay. You didn't play many.
I will say he's not the only one from that season. And that season actually was the most recent one.
What season? Say 2004-2005?
2011-2012.
Oh, 11 and 12, right, okay.
So that he's not the only one from that season, but there's not been anyone on this list since that season. So that gives you big clues and narrows it right down for you.
So I don't think he would have done. Would Shawcross have been in there?
Shawcross is the other one from that season. Oh, he got 13 yellows from 49. So the two centre-halves, 49 games, got 27 yellow cards between them. And we wonder why people used to be scared of facing them.
Yeah, too right. Okay. So did you say no more that recent now? I need to go back before 2011. Is that what you're saying now?
I will really be kind to you and say that all the others, like I say, are this century, but are all from either League One or Championship.
Okay. So, Championship, we came down. I'm trying to think who was getting most of them.
You'll kick yourself if you don't get the one of them.
I probably will. Oh, God's sake.
He actually did it twice. One before promotion and one after.
Fuller?
No, not that promotion. Before. So once he did it in League One, then he did it again in the Championship.
See, I thought bloody Wilco. I don't think he ever really played that many games.
He was 200 times for Stoke, Wilco, but I think he's actually a lot cleaner tackler than people give him credit for. He was very strong in the tackle, but I think he wasn't like... if he went into a tackle, he generally won the ball, I feel.
I mean, I don't know if he's in it. Probably isn't in this list. I was trying to think Glenn Whelan, but I don't think he was...
No, not Glenn Whelan.
No, it wouldn't be Whelan. No.
Think earlier than Whelan. Got one life left.
I can't take any risks now. This is going to really annoy me. It's really going to annoy me. So, bear with me. I'm really just trying to think back through the teams. I mean, James McLean won't have any, will he? No. Can't be.
Got 11 one season.
I remember him getting a few for the stupid decisions. Mate, this isn't going to be me, I'm afraid. I am going to kick myself, aren't I?
Do you want me to give you the answers?
Go on, give me the answers.
So the one that surprised me, 2007-2008, leading the way, one ahead of Richard Creswell and Ricardo Faure, who both got 11.
Ooh.
12 yellow cards, 44 games, Liam Lawrence.
Liam Bloody Lawrence.
A dirty guess.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I remember a couple, but it definitely didn't feel like he was prolific.
No. So before that, you have to go to 2003-2004, 12 yellows in just 30 matches. He could have come back as manager a few weeks ago, John Eustace.
Wow.
Before that, you have the man who did it twice. So 2000-2001, he had 13 yellows and 45. I believe he had to go in front of the FA. I think he had a couple in the cup as well. Actually, I think he may have been fifth up to nearly. No, he got 13, but he had to go to the FA and sort of say, you know, I shouldn't be banned because, you know, I'm a midfielder and make a load of tackles. And this, you know, and it's not for back chatting or anything like that. And then he got 12 in 47 in 2002-2003 to go with it. James O'Connor.
Wow.
And the other one, 2001-2002, 14 yards from 42 games on our way to promotion, Wayne Thomas.
Wayne Thomas, yeah. Okay, yeah, no, you're right, mate.
Good old nuts in there, isn't
there? There is some ones. I mean, hopefully everyone else at home's done better than I have there. But, yeah, some interesting names. I think Liam Lawrence being an interesting one. He wouldn't have been top of my tree, but, okay. Well, I think, yeah, I'm back to my normal crappy form, but that's fine, I'll take it.
Learned to tackle from, like, off his dog, probably, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, probably.
His dog was foul play, tripping him up.
Well,
let's hope that the ref keeps his cards in his pockets for the Stoke players on Saturday, and we don't have anyone getting closer to being added on that list. Looking at you, Mr. Ben Pearson. And yes, we can hopefully come back with at least a share of the spoils, but ideally go back-to-back home wins. Wouldn't that just be pretty? Oh, yes.
Imagine how different everyone would be feeling about things with back-to-back. People would start using that word promotion again. I'm joking. Christ.
Well, we were looking the other day, weren't we, about when our 200th pod would come up, and I was like, well, it depends if we make the playoff. Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, forget that now.
Yeah, well, for the next pod, we haven't got any midweek ones now for a few weeks, have we? I don't think.
I think the next double match week is Easter, maybe? I'd be wrong with that.
Yeah, I think so. There's in March, is that the international break?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, and it's 2 weeks. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to have a... I think you're right. We're going to have another midweek one now for a bit.
They've got Leeds away in the 5th of March. That's on a Tuesday.
And then it's on a Tuesday.
Yeah, and then we play, obviously, Good Friday and Easter Monday. And then we've got the Wednesday, the 10th of April. So, yeah, there's not many midweek games left now.
Good. So, yeah, all the pods will be out everyone then normal time. So every single Friday. Around 6 a.m.-ish, as long as the systems are being kind. We might have a special guest for the next one that a lot of you would have heard it, the voice of a number of times, has not been on this podcast before. So as long as the stars align, then there should be a nice regular voice that you'll like. But yeah, we'll see how it goes, eh?
Yes. We've got a few people who are interested in joining us. A few new faces, haven't they, who've come and asked if they can be a part of our recording. So, yes. We shall see. See how it all pans out.
When you're all over the BBC website and everything, a drop of a hat without knowing about it. we'll have to be careful about leaving the house soon, Dan. We'll be mauled by all the women throwing themselves at us. We wish.
No, it's not worth the affle, Mark. It's not worth the affle of it all.
It's not better. Well, I brought a cap the other day, ready for my holiday in July. So we'll go out with caps on, and I've got a fake beard I can give to you, or something. We'll obviously we're only joking, Christ. Anyway, we love a good tangent, and we thought we might finish on one. So, I guess, Dan, look, appreciate you joining us, mate. Let's enjoy the game, hopefully, at the weekend. Fingers crossed we've turned a bit of a corner. We need more than one fixture to do that. But, the fans were in good voice, good spirits, I think, in the week. So fingers crossed now that we can take it into the weekend's game against Coventry. So thank you very much, mate. And I shall see you on the next pod.
Go on, Stoke.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.